This meeting is private, bearing false witness, misrepresentation, and posting inflammatory rhetoric in public forums is forbidden and shall be addressed in appropriate matter. To eliminate all conflicts and false allegations, is there anyone in attendance at today's meeting that is a member or agent of any law enforcement agency or public agency of the federal, state, county, city, or township agencies present? Is there any response to this decision for the first time? This meeting is private, bearing false witness, misrepresentation, and posting inflammatory rhetoric in public forums is forbidden and shall be addressed in appropriate matter. To eliminate all conflict and false allegations, is there anyone in attendance at today's meeting that is a member or agent of any law enforcement agency or public agency of the federal, state, county, city, or township agencies present? Is there any response to this decision for the second time? This meeting is private, bearing false witness, misrepresentation, and posting inflammatory rhetoric in public forums is forbidden and shall be addressed in appropriate manner. To eliminate all conflict and false allegations, is there anyone in attendance at today's meeting that is a member or agent of any law enforcement agency or public agency of the federal, state, county, city, or township agencies present? Is there any response to the decision for the third time? Hearing none, anyone who is here under false pretense, anyone who is working for any foreign government, including the territory of the United States or municipal United States, anyone who is being paid or coerced to be here must fully disclose their presence and purpose now or leave the premises or conference call. If they subsequently show up as federal witnesses, they are discredited for failure to disclose. How you doing, everybody? Today is January 25th, 2026, and this is the Union State meeting. All counties are welcome to attend. We're going to be working on our general assembly and going over some little training on the We're going to do training on the Justice of the Peace and on the county or the court clerk, so that we, you know, those are the two positions we have left to actually stand up our courts. We have all the jurors, we have, you know, a sheriff, we have the bondsman, or actually I think we need a bondsman too. We may have one, but I'm not sure. I'll have to look at the list. And we have the coroner and certain people, the ones that we need in that list of people for the courts. Does anybody have any questions before we get started on the actual training part of it and stuff that we're going to be working on?
I'm sorry, I just didn't hear recording has started. Did you start it?
Yeah, the recording has started. Since Keith is not here, I think he's in the deal. We're going to actually, unless somebody wants to do the prayer. PT, do you want to do it?
Yes, I'll do it.
Okay, thank you.
Heavenly Father, we wanted to come before you this evening as we gather together to conduct our Union State meeting. We ask for your Holy Spirit to shadow us today and give us your guidance, your wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Lord, we ask for your protections on all of us also, and we pray for those who are not here with us. May you bless us all with your peace and grace. In the precious name of Jesus, amen.
So be it. Thank you, Pito.
Welcome.
One of the things, I mean, I'll just start off with this now. We're going to discuss it at the end of the meeting, is I'm looking at changing the meeting to Saturdays at 6 o'clock, and I'd like to know what everybody's thought is on that. I know Sunday there's a lot of people that can't make it, and I get emails all the time. So I'm thinking about moving it to that time.
I concur.
You like that time?
Yes.
Anybody else that want to say anything about it, or do they like Sundays?
that's fine with me. If it helps more people attend, I'm all for it.
Okay.
I'm good
okay.
with that.
You're good with that, too? Yeah, I just don't want... I'm trying to get as many people as I can and, you know, to get involved. And if they, you know, a lot of people work on Sundays. They go to church on Sundays. So they're not able to come to the meetings. And I would like to have everybody show up if they can. You know, so if we can accommodate some of these other people, I would like to do that. So it's also, too, I want to let everybody know, possibly this next weekend, I probably won't have a meeting. I'm supposed to be going to Colorado that weekend. So if I don't or if I have the time, I will shoot out an email to everybody to let you know if I'm still going to do it or not. You know, because I'm going to change to Saturday, and I may be in Colorado on Saturday, so I won't be able to do it. Okay. So I'm going to do a start screen share here. Okay. Some of the stuff I'm going to show you is from Lisa. Lisa has this website here, you know, from Ohio. It's called Some Assembly Required. And she's been going through all of the different positions and all the stuff to bring up a court. If you go all the way down to the bottom here, you know, it's starting off like 1, 2, 3, but in the parts we're about, I'm thinking it's probably about 15 here and on, talks about the courts. So if you have any time to actually go through some of this stuff, you know, do it. It's actually really good. You'll see, because I'm going to play some of it today on the justice of the peace. Now, what I'm going to be training and whatever is only county courts, not state courts, okay? So in the county, we have justice of the peaces, and in the state, you have just the justice, okay? That's the difference. And the difference is that soil jurisdiction is the justice of the peace. You know, international or land jurisdiction is the justice. So we got to keep that in mind, okay? This part right here, they're talking about the justice of the peace and what the role of the justice of the peace is. I'm going to be skipping around a little bit, but if you can, this is episode 19, and watch the whole thing if you want. I'm not going to play the whole thing. You know, it's literally like an hour and 30 minutes, which we're not going to do that. But I want to get you to hear certain parts of just about the justice, right? So with that said, I'm going to start off with the first part of it here where they talk about what the justice is.
We plan to move on with our justice in our kind of our core sphere that we've been putting on. And, of course, justice of the peace being on the county. But a lot of people, you know, I think it's really important that we get down to what are we looking for in a justice? What do they need? What do they need to demonstrate or know when they decide to step up and, you know, be elected into being justice? And then, you know, how do the justices operate in our court? I've got a little bit of an idea in terms of, I looked up justice responsibilities on sort of from the de facto side of common law. Not real close to what we do. But I'd like to compare and contrast those later when we get to it, so that everybody kind of understands the difference between our type of justice and their type of justice. Okay.
Well, they're not typically, let me put this way, they're not supposed to have justice.
No, they're not.
They're supposed to have judges.
Right.
Which is a different kind of animal. Just as there's a difference between a counselor of law and an attorney, okay? And these are jurisdictional differences. A lot of people call me Judge Anna, but I'm not the judge. I'm a justice. And I understand that this is a common assumption, that the two things are the same. I understand that it's a common assumption that a judge means a justice or vice versa, but they don't really. The difference is written in the Bible, where you have two different kinds of authorities. You have the authority of God, and you have the authority of man. And this split happened when the Israelites asked for a king to be set over them. And I believe that's in the book of Samuel. You can just, you know, look it up, where they came to the prophet and then they said, you know, we want a king set over us, like our Canaanite neighbors have a king set over them, so that we have somebody that we can rely upon to make very prompt and obvious judgments for us, you know. Okay, so Samuel goes to God and tells him, we have been a king set over them, like the Canaanites have. And God kind of mocks him and said, okay, you want a king? Here, here's Saul. Not fun. So when man rejected God as their king, a whole bunch of things happened. One of which was the development of legal systems that are, you know, the rules of men, as opposed to lawful systems, which are derived from God's law, God's system of doing things, universal law, natural law. So you've got two systems here. You've got a system that is based on our understanding of nature and nature's God, as the founders put it. And we've got the law of men, which includes all of the various things that mankind has set in place that are not derived from any natural law. So, two systems running in tandem. And by far the system that has the greatest authority is the system of natural law. But you don't see that because the system of man-made law has taken such a precedence. It's become so all-encompassing that all you ever hear or see in the course of normal life is this other kind of law that was created by mankind, and all you ever see are the people that administer that kind of law who are known as judges. But the ones who are administering God's law, the law of nature, of the Creator, they're called justices, and they're over here on this side. Okay?
Yes. Exactly. Well, I was going to bring up the fact that that's in 1 Samuel. I think it's chapter 8 where that occurs, if anybody's really interested.
I think that is actually the crux of the whole matter. I think that is 100% the crux of what we've all gone through over the past several thousand years. Right there. It's you have to make a decision in your own life whether you're going to be ruled by God or you're going to be ruled by man. And, you know, if we could just settle this one thing, we would be an infinity beyond where we are now. But this has been an open argument, an open issue since the days of Samuel the prophet. So will you be ruled by man or will you be ruled by God? And if you're ruled by man, then you're ruled by fools.
Right, exactly. Why would we choose man over the ultimate creator? I mean, that makes no sense.
Well, it's convenient to have somebody tell you what to do. And this is the nanny state mentality. You know, now that all this crap has come out about, the mismanagement of money and the waste and the abuse and the fraud and all the rest of it, it's finally come out and people are just left stunned, And, we're talking, we're discussing it in terms of the bankruptcy. Well, we know about the bankruptcy because we've been paying attention. But we're having a lot of people that are responding like four-year-olds when Nanny left the room. It's like, I'm so dependent on the Nanny, and the Nanny's like, oh, what are we going to do? All these federal workers are being jettisoned, and all these federal programs are being quit, and they're just going to have to live without the Nanny. They don't know what to do. They think the sky is falling. And actually, they're just returning to their own natural condition and state and being forced to pick up and do their own work, make their own decision.
We were always meant to have, that's why we had 18 enumerated powers outlined in the Constitution. We were always meant to take care of the rest of the things on the states, and mostly by private resources that way. We were meant to set up our own small businesses. Everybody's always heard small businesses are the engine of the United States. Well, they are. And they're the ones that are supposed to be out there providing the services, not the behemoths.
Right. Exactly. And on top of that, we have a situation where the justice system has been, how can I put this, substituted. We're supposed to have one kind of law governing the people of this country, and instead all of the people have been redefined as corporate franchises, and everything is being operated under this foreign form of law. We're supposed to have justice, and that justice is supposed to be applied by what? Justices. But instead, we have man-made codes, rules, regulations, things that are administrative in nature, okay? We've got all of these things over here that are being misapplied to average people. And they're really meant to be applied to corporations and officials that work for corporations. Okay?
That's a cool employee handbook.
Right. It's if you're not a federal or franchise employee, then all of this kind of law, statutes, codes, regulations, ordinances, mandates, all that stuff, applies to them. It does not apply to us. It was never meant to apply to the living man and woman. So now that we're aware of that fact, the question is how to get back to where we belong. How do we invoke our law, and how do we set up our courts, which are over here on the justice side?
To deliver that true justice. That's why most of us are here, right? We've recognized the fraud, we've recognized the injustice of their system, and that is the big reason most of us have changed our political status to come into this, basically just system of government. And our courts are the main watchdogs of that freedom and of that justice.
Right. And you'll notice that we do not judge people in terms of issuing a moral judgment, right? We're not sitting in judgment of individuals. We are sitting in judgment of the law and the facts. All right? So it's not like we are condemning Joe Blow, but we are looking at the actual facts, and we are condemning the action, and we're looking at the actual law, and we're determining whether the law is fair.
Right, exactly. So when we, when we're looking from our assemblies and we're trying to find someone who would be make a good justice, who would you, how would you describe that man or woman?
Well, the very, very most important characteristic of a good justice is that they be logical and fair. You cannot be a good justice if you are prone to prejudice or lack mental acuity or lack a fine sense of logic. Now, in our system, the primary role of the justice is to pronounce the sentence of the jury and to set up the court in such a way that decorum is maintained and evidence is preserved and evidence is properly adjudged, whether it's admissible or not, which basically comes down to is the evidence of a good, solid provenance? Is it hearsay? If so, it cannot be admitted as evidence. And certain basic rules that apply to evidence to make sure that the evidence that the jury is presented with is truly admissible and accessible and solid, okay? But basically, the judge is just concerned with getting the facts properly before the jury.
Right.
And then the jury decides. The jury examines both the facts in the case and the law being applied to the case. And it's equally important when they say the facts and the law. Okay, so the facts may be that on April 17th, 1999, Joe Zibble walked out his front door and knocked over the mailman by mistake. Okay, the mailman fell on the sidewalk, hit his head, and has been in a coma ever since. Okay, those may be the facts. Then we look at the law. Well, the law may say that, causing permanent disability is to be considered a form of manslaughter. Well, then we look at that and we ask ourselves, well, is it really manslaughter or is it a form of accident injury? See, the jury gets to consider both the facts and the law. Does this law apply in this way? Is the law properly defined to fit these facts? So we get to look at those issues as a jury, make a determination, then the jury foreman delivers the decisions of the jury in open court, read them aloud, and the judge then takes that determination by the jury and pronounces the final sentence.
Right.
If he acts as the speaker of the jury.
So where does the justice then have any kind of interface with the jury at any time other than in the courtroom itself or when the jury speaks to him? Or
they're really not supposed to. The judge is not practicing, the justice is not practicing law in our case. They're not, they're like a referee. The justice is like a referee. The justice is sitting there making sure that, you know, if a jury is impaneled, that they stay in panel. So if a jury is asking for certain records or information, that is provided to them. The justice in our system is acting much more as an administrator of the court and of the process of the court, and isn't really involved in making the decisions that the court is enforcing. The decisions are being made by a jury of 12 peers. Now, what we mean by peers is also somewhat different. When we're talking about peers, we're talking about men and women who have claimed back their status as living men and women and who are claiming their birthright political status and are operating under American common law. And so they're in a different peer group than people who are operating as British territorial corporation officers, okay? That these are two different peer groups. And so when it says you have the right to a trial by jury of your peers, it means that you have a peer group and you have to be, you have to face the trial within your peer group. And this comes up all the time when we have people from our assemblies that are being asked to serve as jurors over here in the other system. They can't actually operate as peers from British territorial persons because they're not British territorial persons. They're American people, you see. So this causes a situation where we can't act as peers in their courts, and they can't act as peers in our courts.
Right.
Different jurisdictions, different forms of law.
Okay, I'm gonna add up here, since we're diving in at this. So I asked, I went out and did a little research and asked, you know, justices and what are the duties of a justice in common law courts. And so as I read through it, the red is where I would say, no, that's not really doesn't apply to us. So adjudication. Justices preside over, of course, legal, not it would be lawful disputes, and ensure that trials are conducted fairly. They listen to the arguments presented by both parties. But that's sort of where their influence ends, is it not? Because, well, they do examine the evidence to make sure it's appropriate, but they do not make rulings based on the facts or the case of law. The jury does that, just as you spoke.
Yeah, well, they do more than examine the evidence. They make rulings about the evidence. If the evidence is hearsay, for example, it's duty of the justice to mix it and say, no, we can't accept that because that was third party, you know, so-and-so heard from so-and-so and so-and-so heard from so-and-so, and we can't accept that as evidence. Okay, so they do make rulings about evidence in our court. They don't make rulings. Rulings, even the word rule, ruling, right? We don't have a rules-based system. When you're dealing with American common law, you're dealing with prior court decisions that may or may not apply. And so part of examining the law is that when a a controversy arises and you have people bringing forward something in dispute, you look at similar cases that have come about in the past, and you try to make a determination based on those former cases. And if you can't, well, then you have to set a new case precedent for a new situation, right? But this is being done by a jury of your peers. It's not being done by the judge. The judge can offer information. The justice can offer information. They can point out things in the law that the jury may not observe just because they're not learned in the law, but they don't have a function of practicing, you know, law on the bench. They're not there to do this. Again, they're more like a referee saying, okay, this is in bounds, that's out of bounds, this is solid evidence that can be considered, this is not solid evidence, it can't be considered. You know, we have a proper chain of provenance and custody of this evidence. We don't have a proper chain of custody and provenance of this evidence. Therefore, you know, we can present this evidence, but with the caveat that we don't have the provenance of it. You know, these are things that the justice can do to set things up as plainly and clearly as they possibly can for the jury to consider all the facts and to know the law and to consider the law. Okay, but the judge, or the justice in this case, is supposed to be there as a resource for the jury. Okay.
I'm going to stop the recording right there, because I'm going to skip forward on some other things, but they go through each one of these things about, does the justice do any of these, like interpreting the law? No, he does not. Does he do any sentencing? He does not. Legal reasoning of, you know, the judgments, whatever, no, he does not, right? Does he do case management? That a little bit, I mean, he will, you know, like what she's saying is that in each case or whatever, he makes sure that all the right documents are there and whatever, so he does manage it a little bit, but again, it's up to the court clerk to do a lot of the management stuff. The justice does not do that. Does he do a judicial review over it? No, he doesn't. Whatever the jury comes up with, he has to rule on it. You know, whatever they say, that's what it is. He cannot change that ruling. He cannot modify it. He cannot say, well, they really meant this and we're going to do something else. He can't do that either, right? That isn't what the justice does. Does he have administrative duties? Yes, he does have administrative duties. You know, as far as, like she was saying, on who's, you know, like getting the right evidence to the juries, making sure that the juries, whatever they need, they get, you know, that kind of stuff. Not sure about the upholding the Constitution. In our courts, we uphold the Constitution against the other people, but we're not part of the Constitution. So if we do have a ruling against the Constitution, you know, like a corporation, you know, validated, you know, did something against the Constitution, then we can, our juries can actually rule on that. And again, the justice has no, you know, say on how the jury actually talks about that. Okay, I'm going to move forward. Let's see if I can grab the next piece I want. I'm a bit further here. Does that, anybody have any questions about what she said so far and what a justice is? No questions or any comments on that? Okay, let's play this next piece since I don't hear anything.
Into what evidence was presented to the jury. That's a mistrust. What if it turns out that the judge, unknown to everybody, is the cousin of the defendant, and he uses his position and his influence to, in some way, tweak the evidence or hold some of the evidence back that would serve to convict his cousin. That's a mistrial. And suddenly you have to go back and do everything all over again with a different jury and different drugs, and you know, the whole thing gets picked out, and you start over again.
Right. So those are the things that we have to keep vigilant on so that we don't necessarily allow any kind of conflict of interest within our courts. You know, we went over that in jury, what that is. And so, you know, our juror pool has to be very vigilant about their ability to sort through those issues and make sure that that doesn't enter into our courts.
Right. I mean, even things like the thing that there is a, think that there's a case brought against the local fire department for some particular mismanagement of the fire department. If your brother was a member of that fire department, you would want to see yourself as a juror. Because even though it isn't your spouse, it is a blood relative, or a, you know, even an adopted brother. You would want to recuse yourself and say, no, I can't sit on that jury because I know so-and-so, and I would be prejudiced in his favor. Yeah?
I had a question come up about that, about, okay, what if it's an injury, a true harm, right?
Right.
And you're in insurance, and you're on the jury pool. Can you be a juror? Mm-hmm. As long as it's a company, I would.
Yeah, I mean, if say that you're a State Farm agent, and there's a claim against State Farm by the plaintiff was bringing suit against State Farm for negligence in the processing of their insurance claim. Well, obviously, if you're a State Farm agent, you're saying, you know, I can't serve on that jury.
Right. If you're with Allstate, you might use it for good purposes. No,
if you want to really seriously consider, you know, whether that is something that could influence your ability to reach a fair and unprejudiced conclusion. I mean, simply being in the insurance industry could be a basis for not wanting to sit on such a case because you already know so much about how that works and how insurance is supposed to work and everything that you might be prejudiced in favor of the insurance company.
Right. So really, that really relies on each man and woman to identify that conflict of interest within themselves.
Yes.
But they have to also make that known in the jury pool. They may choose to have somebody a little bit different in the seat than, you know.
Right. You know, I have been asked to sit in juries where I'm not a member of their hearing, and so I can't sit on their jury because I'm not here.
Right.
Yeah. I've been asked, you know, even before I knew that, I've been asked to sit on their juries concerning things that I would have a prejudicial interest in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start that. The reason I played that part is that's part of the justice will also, if he finds out that there's some kind of conflict with the way that you would be, you know, like a person, if you were like a relative of that person or an insurance company or whatever, you know, the justice will say, well, that person can't be a juror, and then they would have to repick new jurors or pick their active, you know, juror, right? So that was the reason I played this. This is part of what the justice will actually do. So I'm going to go on to the next piece here. Now, I'd suggest everybody watch this whole thing, because they talk about a lot of good things about, you know, all about the courts, the juries, all that kind of stuff. See if I got the right spot. Nope. We'll start here.
Of the Constitution should be interpreted this way or another way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you get people acting as justices, Supreme Court justices, right? Talking about the Constitution, and what are the Constitution? Land law.
Right. There you go.
Okay. So you do have some, at the very top, you have some areas where you do have justices writing in the land law a detailed opinion. But speaking, you know, day to day, you don't have, our justices don't write detailed opinions about anything. Our justices may have an opinion as an individual, but they don't enter into the process of a court that's running under a trial by jury. So when the end line comes out of the jury has documented their reasoning. You know, they have come to a reasoned determination, and they are the ones that write out their reasoning, and then they come forward with their determination. Now, the jury actually isn't talking about legal reasoning. They're talking about their reasoning. That's living, breathing, and you know, given fact one, given fact two, and given fact three, the jury hereby determines that blah, blah, blah.
Right. Okay. All right, so they have case management. They manage the flow of cases through the court system, ensuring that cases are processed efficiently and that the rights of all parties are protected.
Well, and that gets to the role of the justice as kind of an administrator of the court. We as living people have a right to a speedy trial. You know, we can't be held up for, you know, held in jail for a year waiting a trial, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's the business of the justice to make sure that you're getting an expeditious trial and that you are getting through this bump in your road as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Right. Okay. All right. So judicial review. Justice may have the authority to review and invalidate laws or government actions that are found to be unconstitutional.
Well, okay, now this is where you're getting into Supreme Court justice layer justices, because they do have a very few people who maintain the role of justice on the land, and that is a Supreme Court function, where the Supreme Court justices do have an authority to review and invalidate laws and government actions on their side, right? On their system,
right?
And they can declare them unconstitutional. So this is where you get into cases like we just had this past couple of years, where the Supreme Court may review things that are actually old.
Right, you know, like West Virginia versus EPA.
Right, and where, you know, Norton versus Chalmers County was decided 117 years ago, and the justices reviewing this came back and reaffirmed at a higher level the determination of the Tennessee Supreme Court case.
Mm-hmm.
It was 117 years old, and then that was then reiterated again by another Supreme Court case this past year, the Loper Enterprises case. Same thing, where a justice operating in terms of land law still has the ability to review and invalidate things that the regulatory and legislative law has set up that is unconstitutional.
Okay, I'm going to stop it there. That's the ending of what I was going to do with the justice. I was trying to give everybody an ideal of what our justice do, which she's talking about as a Supreme Court justice from here on and some other things. I would suggest everybody watch this video. It's episode 19. You know, especially if you want to be a justice, they go through a lot of cases and a lot of different things and explain what our justice does. And basically our justice, especially in the county, because we don't deal with land, we don't deal with, you know, international stuff in a county. So our justice wouldn't do a lot of these different things. They're basically administrator of our, you know, our county courts, and they're the ones that make sure that the evidence is evidence and not hearsay and not anything that, you know, would derail a case because, you know, bad evidence got in. You know, to the jury, you know, because our jury is the ones that make all of the decisions in the court. And if you guys remember, let me see if I can do this real quick. last meeting. This one. Nope. So if you remember, I showed you this here. We're going to make some changes on it because we're going to move the sheriff over here. Also, I noticed that we don't have the ombudsman on here, which we actually need to. But you'll notice that the jury's in the center here, and they're the ones that are going to be asking, you know, the defendant and the plaintiff all the questions. The justice of the peace is sitting over here, and basically, if the jury has any questions about is something certain law, whatever, then the justice will, you know, respond to them, whatever. But the justice itself is only there to make sure everything in the courtroom here is getting done by our laws and, you know, any past laws or whatever that we've done. Okay? So that's where that one is. Does anybody have any questions about the Justice of the Peace and their role in our courts?
Rocky?
Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I'm just thinking, I used to think the role would be so much more, and it just seems pretty straightforward so that, you know, people wouldn't be afraid to take on the role. I'm a checklist person, and you could just make up a thing, you know, checklist, evidence, put that in, you know, and go, and until you have it all memorized. It just doesn't seem as difficult as I once thought it was.
Yeah, the Justice of the Peace is one of the easiest jobs in the courtroom, and again, it's just making sure the court, you know, it's like she was saying, you know, like we are owed a speedy trial. Well, the justice of the peace makes sure that, you know, the court goes, you know, goes through what it needs to do and get it done as quick as we can, and to get it over so people can have their lives over again, you know, start again. But, you know, the justice doesn't do a lot. They will, you know, sign whatever the jury says at the end and said this is, you know, this is law at this point. But they really don't have, you know, like you said, the checklist for justice of the peace is really small on what they do. And there's a lot of people, you know, that's, like she said, if you're logical and you understand, you know, like different things, you know, like God's law, whatever, that, and you're not somebody that goes against a race or goes against a certain deal or hates different things, you know what I'm saying? You got to be open. You got to be, you know, apply the law to everybody the same. And, you know, like I said, the justice really doesn't make those decisions. A lot of them, it is the jury that actually is doing that. They're just making sure that the jury gets the right evidence. Any more on that? Anybody else? Okay, that's one of the positions we need to fill. I'd like to get two people to do it, because one for like criminal courts and one for civil courts. You know, otherwise we're getting swamped out. At first we're going to be okay because we're not going to have a lot of cases to deal with at first. But, you know, we don't want to burn somebody out either. Okay, the next position, if we don't have any more comments or questions on this, is our county clerk. That's another position we need to fill, and we need to figure out what it is that they do. And this next video part here has to do with the county clerk. I'll give you a little rundown at first. Basically, they hold all the court documents and they record everything, and they're the ones that get all the documents that come in for a case to the jury. They also get them to the justice of the peace to get things running. They're mostly like a filing person, and they actually, you know, like stamp all the deals when the information comes with it, and they also look over the documents to make sure that they're lawful documents and they're, you know, there isn't no hearsay or something, you know, because they'll listen to whatever it is when somebody files a paperwork. Now, they're not the only people that you can file your paperwork to. You can file it through the sheriff. You can file it through the justice himself and through the court clerk. You know, there's several ways of getting your documents into the case. And our courts, the way that they're made, is in case you had, say, if you had a sheriff that wasn't a good sheriff and he wasn't going to submit your documents to the court, then you can go to the court clerk and then file them there, and they will get in the case. So there's ways around to make sure that everybody gets their information into the case, right? So with that said, I'm going to start this play now.
We, while you were unavailable, we talked a lot about court clerk, and our court clerk is Ethan Wonder. He is, I would tell everybody, the court clerks run the court. I don't care what anybody says, just go ask them, right? and they make sure that all the paperwork, all the workings, everything's done, ready to go. The people, you know, are mostly there and organized, and they see to it that all that paperwork is taken care of. There, it's a paperwork position. I love paperwork for that. So I thought maybe you might want to speak a little bit on that in your perspective, and then we'll go on.
Well, the court clerks have always been very important in the functioning of the courts. And the courts keep their own records, and their public records, they have to be maintained very honorably and very precisely. And the court clerk system makes sure that that happens. Now, a court can also have a secretary who is doing work with the court and with the clerk, but the responsibility for maintaining the court's records.
And I'm going to stop a little here and just make a little comment. If you notice in the General Assembly handbook and all that, there's a court secretary, and that's what she's talking about. That person there would then assist the court clerk in helping getting the documents and that kind of stuff, just so that, you know, the court clerk's not overwhelmed. So that's what the court secretary is. We also need one of those if somebody wants to do that too, so that we can speed up things and help the court clerk out. Can we continue?
Lies with the clerk. And the clerk, therefore, is a position of trust, because both the plaintiffs and the defendants are relying upon the clerk to have exact and accessible record of everything that goes into the case and everything that results from the case, including the transcript or recording of the actual jury process or whatever else is going on in that case. So it's a very important position. It involves a lot of public trust, and anyone who steps forward to be clerk has to be a person of really good character, have to be very devoted to their tasks. Pardon me. I'm still suffering from the effects of a bad cold, and so trying to keep my voice going. But anyway, I'm sure that Lisa covered that pretty extensively last week, and she is blessed to have a good court clerk in Ohio. So I'm wishing the same good fortune to every assembly, and be looking for that very special person who has that eye for detail and who is committed to capturing the information and keeping it safe and organized. A lot of people don't realize that the court record is a specific separate record. Okay, so if you have something like a complaint, or you have a any kind of a testimony, say you're giving information about a possible crime, well, it goes to the sheriff, right? But if you want to create a permanent record, it goes to the court, then to the court clerk.
Right. One of the things that I explain, that I usually explain, is that, you know, when it comes to court processes, especially in the criminal aspect, that a complaint can go through the county sheriff and come into the court. It can go through your county coroner or state coroner. And then it also can come through, you know, the court clerk as well and enter into the court. In our system, that's correct. And so that kind of eliminates the in some ways, the possibility or the worry that you might have a dirty sheriff, a dirty coroner, and you still have, you know, a lawful court clerk that can service whatever that complaint is and see that justice is served as well.
Right, and that's why we have multiplicity of services throughout our government. It doesn't hinge on just an office or officer.
It's always checks and balances, right?
Right, and so, for example, people are confused why we have different recording services for land records. We have an international land recording and publishing service, and we have all of the state LROs, and we can also use state-of-state land recording offices where they exist and are cooperative. And it's because we need that diversity of access. And the same thing here. It doesn't just depend on one office. If it depends on one office and one officer, then it's too easy for that particular position to be targeted and corrupted, and for suddenly no service to be available to the public.
Right, exactly. That's exactly it. And so, you know, as we set up our court systems, you know, we have to be constantly thinking about those types of roles and situations and creating those checks and balances that allow us to make sure that justice is delivered in a way that we've never had it before, right?
Well, not in recent times, anyway.
Exactly. So, Anna, in our system, well, particularly on Ohio systems, the court clerk also kind of oversees. I don't want to call him a gatekeeper because he's not really a gatekeeper in the traditional sense, but he also watches over and makes sure that, for example, to our living court, non-criminals, right,
mm-hmm.
that people have followed steps of self-governance or arbitration before they're coming into court, or that they just can't complain. They actually have to have a verified claim before they really can. And that's going to help in assisting keeping frivolous claims out of our court. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Well, oftentimes we observe that people are not making the appropriate amount of effort to resolve a problem before they take it to court.
Mm-hmm.
We've grown up in a society where every problem, let's file a lawsuit. Every little thing, let's file a lawsuit. Let's file a lawsuit. Here's a very staggering statistic. Over 90% of all court cases worldwide are filed here in America. The rest of the world isn't like this. The rest of the world is not, you know, going to court every time there's some sort of... It's only here in this country that we use the courts as our own personal problem-sorting service. And by doing that, we give them a great deal more power than we should. Because we're letting them be the arbiters of our fate and our experience. And we really should be working harder to resolve problems as communities and as individuals before we ever think about going to court.
Right. It's really, we've been indoctrinated into a very litigious nature within our society. And, you know, we're not, part of our court process is very biblically based in terms of being able to face our accusers, you know, try to make attempts at self-governance and trying to resolve our issue, going through maybe an arbiter that would, you know, listen to the problem and maybe make suggestions. And then if all else fails and everybody wants to just throw the gauntlet down, going into court, but that means our jurors are going to decide for you, right? And that may not turn out so well for the claimant, you know, if they're just being contentious and what I would call rather stupid about their litigiousness, right? So, you know, the first time somebody calls, it has an opinion, right? We all have opinions,
right.
And like we all have noses and other body parts. And so it is a matter of, you know, sometimes we don't mean to offend someone. Sometimes we use the wrong word. Sometimes we call out their behavior. And the first thing we've been indoctrinated is, it's slander, right? And we don't try to listen to, you know, and if somebody wants to run into court on slander, I haven't seen too many slander cases in the courts. Usually it's ambulance chasing and neglect of personal responsibility mostly. But
unless you're a member of The View.
Exactly.
You know, they're facing some of the biggest number claims against any organization ever.
And while they should
have been named in the character and slander.
Right. So, but you know, if we, for example, if we tell somebody you're being stupid, and you slandered me, Well, you know, that maybe you need to be listening, right? So, it's not a matter that we run straight to the court on. Is my point. It's really about farm or no farm. You know, have we really done farm? And so, you know, our court clerk has the ability to take a look at that and see whether or not we followed the steps, and to try to resolve it before we take it into our court. He may be asking, he's going to ask for your evidence. He's going to ask for, you know, proof of your claim. He's going to do all of those things, right, before it goes into court.
Right. Well,
I'm going to stop it a little bit right there because I want to show you another document that I created, which is kind of what she's talking about, is the court clerk is going to make sure that you've, like, talked to the sheriff, you know, talk to an ombudsman, right? Hang on here so I can find that. Document I created? No, not that one. This one here. So this was one of the things I created that we need to actually kind of follow, and the court clerk will actually do that. You know, did you talk to the sheriff, right? Was this dispute resolved or not? If it wasn't, did you go to an ombudsman, right, or some kind of mediator to try to mediate that? Because everything that we do is we try not to go to court. You know, we try to solve everything before we get to that point. So did the ombudsman able to, you know, resolve that dispute or not? If not, then the clerk at this point, we then get the documents from the sheriff and the ombudsman and from the claimant and the defendant, and they would file all those court papers into the court. Then what the court clerk will do is select some juries, but even before they select the court date and all that, they're going to take three of those, they're going to select, in this part here, three of the jurors to actually try to do another mediation, arbitration on that, to see if they can settle it before they take it to the court. Otherwise, the court clerk at that point is going to take it to the court, you know, actually set up the court, the venue, and everything else. So that's the role of a court clerk, is to make sure all of this happens. That's what they're talking about. And we need to make sure that happens because we don't want to flood our courts for stupid things or, you know, trying to, you know, run everything through the court and try to solve it, you know, like we're supposed to be as men and women, actually solve those together, you know, peacefully and, you know, without having to, you know, to use a court or anything like that. You know, it's like the de facto, that's the first thing they'll want to do is they want to run you through the court so they can charge you for this, charge you for that. You know, and the way we do things is we try to keep you out of the courts if we can. You know what I'm saying? Because we need to solve things, as, like I said, as men and women. So I'm going to play some more so you can see what they say about it.
Our system of government gives us the ombudsman's office if we have problems and things that the government is doing, right?
Right.
So we have one source of arbitration there that will hopefully stop things from going to court. And then we have all sorts of private arbitration services where you can take a dispute and a third party will review it and give you the pros and cons. Usually these arbitration services are people that have had positions prior to starting their own arbitration service that qualifies them to analyze a case in terms of both the legal and lawful aspects. And they can look at the whole situation as an impartial third party and say, well, you know, there's this, and there's that, and, you know, this is the point where it all comes together, and, you know, the best thing for you guys to do is, you know. And so using those private arbitration services can really help to diffuse situations and to get to the heart of them and to resolve the problem without going to court, which is great for the court system and great for you, because if you've got a case you can get really strong, you may not know certain aspects of the law or the way things get organized in a court case. And so going through that arbitration before deciding to go to court is often very useful and insightful. If you do decide to go on from the arbitration process and actually go to court and bring it in as an issue, you'll know what you're facing, and you'll be better prepared to answer the court. So hiring a private arbitration service to analyze the case and give you a fair opinion before you actually go to court can often help you to decide whether or not to go to court, number one. And number two, can expose any deficiencies in your argument or your presentation of the case before you go to court.
Okay. I'm going to stop it there. I'm going to move forward into this. Trying to keep this, again, you guys watch this whole video because they go over a lot of court cases and stuff like that. Where it is now. Anyway, we're going to keep going. This is actually where it is. I want them to talk.
Great. Anything else on court clerks you want to add before we move on?
Well, the court clerk has a very difficult job. And because of that, I always encourage people to be kind to the court clerk. Be respectful, be kind, be reasonable. And on terms of people being court clerks, there is one little bit of their job that they need to be aware of. If people bring documents to the court, it is traditional and advisable that they bring the court clerk two copies of the document that they want to add to their case. And then the court clerk time and date stamps it. And they have, they actually have a little machine that they put the paperwork in and they date stamp each copy so that the person gets an actual material hard copy with the court clerk's date stamp on it, saying, it arrived here at, 11:03 a.m. on March 3rd, 2025, and then has the court clerk's seal on it.
Okay. I wanted to talk about that. Remember we talked about getting the seals done, whatever? So again, we need to have a court clerk needs to have a seal to seal these documents. And, that's what the seal actually stands for, is they seal it to say that it was accepted and whatever, and they're the ones that did it and signed it, right? So we need to, work on those seals. That's one of the seals we need to work on. I'm going to go on.
And that way, each person involved, meaning using their definition of person, the claimant and the defendant and the court, each gets a date stamp copy that, yes, we did actually receive this on this date. So that's one of the duties of the court clerk, that we don't often explicitly say that. And in the modern world, it's sometimes difficult to get a date stamp from a court clerk. You come in with your two copies, and you ask them to, date stamp receipt of both those copies. They may try both. They still do it, but people haven't been doing this enough so that all the court clerks are familiar with having to date stamp documents. But they get a copy and the claimant or the defendant gets a copy.
Yeah, Yeah, when we've sent people from our litigation in with documents, we always tell them to get it date stamped, signed and date stamped, and stamped with the court clerk. And we found that when they don't, the consequence of that is a lot of times it's never given to the judge, or it never makes it in the court papers, or conveniently the prosecutor never has exactly a copy. So
right. And, you know, if it's date stamped and the court clerk's office is responsible, then they take very good care of that document and it gets in the right hands and the right timing. Otherwise, their butts are in the ringer.
That's it.
So you want to do this, and the court clerks want to provide this service because this is another way that we make sure that justice is done.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. I'm going to stop it at that point on the actual video. I suggest this is episode 21. Please watch the whole thing because they go on with a lot of different cases and what the court clerk actually did on them and that kind of stuff. Does anybody have any questions about what the court clerk really does? You know, it is a time-consuming job. It's, you know, a job that people don't thank you for. You know, there's a lot of paperwork involved and a lot of filing stuff and making sure the justice of the peace gets it, make sure the jury gets copies, you know, the plaintiff and defendant gets copies of everything that's in the case, and the court clerk will make sure that happens. Any questions on that? Anybody want to stand up to be one? Or if you know anybody that's in the assembly that wants to be one, maybe we can contact them. But we actually need to fill that position to get our courts up and running, because we got to prove basically our cases, and those documents that get filed, whatever, are our case and our proof of what happened in that case, right? So the court clerk is really important about getting that stuff done. Any questions or anything? Okay. With that said, is one of the processes that we have to do is everybody, we've been told about the ex parte Milliken and that we're going to have to do that or whatever. We have to do our elections, and these positions are in the elections. Our justice of the peace and our court clerks are the ones we have to vote on publicly, not in the assembly, means in putting them in the papers. We got to do a 30-day saying these are the people that want these positions. The voting's going to be on a certain day. After the voting, they got to be in the papers for another 30 days, basically saying these are the people that, you know, are filling those positions, you know, as far as justice, peace, you know, the sheriff, court clerks, the bondsmen, all of those are public jobs. There's ones that we have to do elections on. So anyway, on my screen right now, this is Ex Parte Milliken. This is what the ruling of it is. And basically, this goes through, you know, when the Supreme Court ruled on it, this is all the documents about what the Ex Parte Milliken is. The state's going to have to do this once they get all of their positions filled. Our counties will actually have to do it too, so that we can prove our elections for our counties and, you know, our officers that will be, you know, running our counties. So we have to do it for every county. So, you know, we got to get the counties up and, you know, doing their things, and so that we can get their elections too. So we got to get coordinators in all the counties. And all the help that they need, we'll, you know, we're trying to do as much training as we can. You know, we're going to help every county, you know, I am. Going to help every county that I can to help get them stood up, you know, and get the people in those positions that they need to get their courts up and whatever in county level, okay? But just so you know what the ex parte, if you want to, you can see this in, you can just search it, you know, ex parte Milliken, this will come up. And you can read through it if you want and understand what it is that we need to do. Also, Lisa did a great little video too about what they did on their ex parte Milliken. If you guys want a copy of that, let me know. I'll send it out to everybody so you can see all the steps that they did to actually do that, okay, for their state. Does anybody have any questions on the ex parte Milliken? Okay, so like I said, I'm trying to get all the information, get as much training as I can on what it is that we got to get accomplished. You know, I'll make sure that this meeting goes out to everybody so everybody has the training. You know, there's quite a few people. And like I said, just starting on the next... Go ahead.
I do have a lot of questions, Milliken, but what is the... can you outline the ABCs about what needs to be presented and to whom and in what format for that ex parte Milliken to be recognized?
I don't know exactly right now. That's the reason why I'll get, you know, Lisa's video. She explains exactly what has to be done. There's another video. I'm trying to remember which one of these videos that I had here where they were talking about it. I'll go over it again. These other ones that Lisa talks about, and I'll get you what she says with Anna about doing the ex parte Milliken, and that will give you all that information you need. And you can go to the Ohio website, and I think on their home page, on the very first page, is their ex parte Milliken document that they sent out.
Okay, I'll check that out. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else? You know, that's one of the things we're going to have to work on, you know, is to make sure that we do it right, too. You know, the ex parte Milliken, because we don't want, you know, the de facto coming after us and say, well, you didn't do your government right, you didn't stand it up right, and all that kind of stuff. So we got it. This is one more information that we're actually going to do training on so everybody understands what it is that we need to do. I will get that information, whatever, but right now, you know, I'm trying to get our courts ready and trained and the information you need. So I'm, you know, like I said, I'm going through all of these different deals. You know, this Ohio website, you know, it's on YouTube and it's called the Ohio Assembly. So if you just search it up, you know, it's basically called Some Assembly Required. There's a lot of good videos that she did. She goes through all of the different deals on the court, different court cases, all kinds of stuff. And those are all at the beginning. You know, so starting at, I think, like 15 or 14, something like that. So watch as many of them can if you're really interested in helping. Every one of us, we need to be well-trained on everything that we're going to be doing. You know, it's, and everybody that's, you know, an ASN really needs to learn what their government that they're creating is and what it does and how you use it, you know, and that kind of thing. We all need to, you know, that's part of self-governance is learning, you know, what it is that we do. So I suggest people go through these videos and watch them. There are a lot of good ones. I've been watching them. You know, I've been watching a lot of them mostly to get some training or some material for you guys to understand what these positions really do. So that's the reason I'm watching them and getting certain areas so, you know, we don't have to watch the whole thing and get the specifics on certain things. Any questions or anything? Okay, at this point, this is all I had for training today. I know somebody wants to talk about something else. I know one of the things, I'm just going to give you a little nugget or whatever, that silver's been going crazy in the last few days. I'll give you a little look at where it is right now. It's already hit $109. It started out yesterday at $98, and now it's at $109. You can see the graph here. See how it goes straight up? It is supposed to go into the thousands. I heard within this month, end of this month or end of next month, it'll hit over 200 an ounce. Just some tidbits so you guys can think about or whatever. If you know, want to try to get some silver, whatever, that's another way of making some money. You know, it just keeps climbing. You know, it started out as 103 today. You know, it's 109 now, so it went up $6, or almost $6 in one day. Just some information that, in case you guys want to know, I'm going to stop screen sharing. But, you know, our world, what this is telling us is that our, as soon as the FRNs really crash, and that's what's caused this silver going up, is the crash of the FRNs, that our global accounts are supposed to open. Now, I've heard from people that there's been some testing with overseas, with exchange and all that, and they've got it working and all that. So, you know, I've heard that it may or may not open in the next week or two, and it'll probably be vendors first, and then it'll go on from there, you know, where we can use the vendors, and then we'll be able to do exchanges to FRNs or whatever. So, to me, it looks like it's going to happen here soon. You know, what is soon? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But everything is looking good for it to happen. Any questions? Anything that anybody wants to talk about that we can go on?
It'd be nice to have those AFDs available for buying silver.
Exactly, huh?
Also, the spot price of gold is over $5,000.
Well, you see right here, it's $5,097 right now. Again, that went up $107 today. You know, the deal is you're going to make more money on silver than gold, because even like a year or, I think it's been a couple years ago. Let's hang a minute. Let's go to gold here. You see the gradual on gold and how it's going up with the deal here. You know, it's like in February of last year, it was at 2,800, and it's doubled it, pretty almost doubled itself in a year. But silver's actually went five times in a year. If I go back to silver, back in the same time, see, it was only like $30 an ounce. And now we're already at 100 and something an ounce. So your return on your money, in my opinion, is in silver, because the same ounce is going to make more money in silver than it will in gold. But I'm not a financial person, and it's up to you where you want to spend your money, or, you know, what you want to invest in. I would suggest getting involved if you have the money, but I know a lot of us don't, and it'd be great to get our AFDs, you know, because we could do that, like Carlos said, is invested in silver and just watch it go up more. Any more comments?
Well, what's going on with the situation with the assembly and in north side of the state with regards to holding meetings here in Clark County?
I heard something about that, whatever. I don't know anything about it. At this point, and I say let's not give them any of our attention or whatever. Let's keep training and get our counties up and running, you know, all the counties, not just Clark County. Even though Clark County is the largest one right now, you know, we need to work with everybody in the state, and we need to stop all of the name-calling or going after people or trying to eliminate people and all this kind of stuff. You know, that's not what we're here for. We're here to actually build a government, and that's what we need to work on and focus on, and not focus on what they're doing up north. Now, anything comes with that, whatever, you know, if it comes to Clark County, then yes, Clark County needs to do something about it. And
well,
that's it.
May I?
Go ahead.
I don't think we have a problem about any of those things that you mentioned I don't see that happening here. We've kind of pretty much cleaned up our own backyard. And the thing that I'm seeing is that from what I saw, the material that you sent me that I was able to review, it looks to me like they're doing outreach to try to get more people on board. And if that's what it is, then, you know, I'm all for that because we need to get as many people on board in our assembly as we can, especially because we want to populate these positions, as you mentioned earlier. So we ought to be doing something similar on our own in any event, because we really need to, a bigger, what I call, core of people who are consistently engaged in this, because it's not easy. Like you said, that court clerk position is extremely important. At the same time, it's tedious, and it requires attention to detail, and it can overwhelm a single person, let alone a group of people. So we need to have some kind of mechanism of recruitment, of getting people involved that can actually do this without being overwhelmed by it. And I'll even tender Aaron as an example on the land recording office. I mean, he can get snowed any given day, you know, that kind of thing. And that's something that, you know, he needs support and help. And I know he's got some people, I believe, that are helping him as well. But we need to expand our core and get more capable people that realize and are mature enough to realize that this is not an easy thing, that there's many facets, that there's going to be all kinds of, letdowns, expectation letdowns and all that type of thing, because not everybody can rise to the level we need as the circumstance requires. And so we're going to be, you know, pushing a lot of boulders out of the way along the way, that kind of thing. But that's the reason why you need a core of people, because more the better. We can help each other. We can get past the stumbling blocks and the boulders that fall in the path. And I yield.
That is actually important, Carlos, is we need to get our outreach going again so that we can do outreach, whatever. But, you know, if the people up north or whatever wants to set up kind of venue here to outreach, I suggest all of us get involved and, you know, flood it and help get people in. You know, it's Aaron, like you said, Aaron has been good at being a recording secretary, and we need, like Anna said in there, that we need our own state LROs up and running. You know, so my focus is to help get that going so that Aaron has, you know, and his group of people, and he can hire more people, you know, to record these people. Because when we get flooded, you know, with outreach and whatever, and to record these people, we're going to need people, you know what I'm saying? And the more people we get into the assembly, the better it will be, you know, so that we can handle it with the amount of people, you know, that we do have in assembly. You know, it's that was one of the reasons I want to change the meeting to Saturdays, is because the amount of emails I've been getting on people that were willing to come in on Saturdays, I think would help us get some of these positions filled. You know, it's even like right now, Tammy, which is the budsman, you know, she can't do Sundays, but she can do Saturdays. You know, that's one person, and she's already stood up to be an ombudsman, but, you know, she's just listening to all the recordings afterwards. Would it be nice to just have her in the meeting? You know what I'm saying? So if we can change it to a day that she can come in, you know, which she says Saturdays is good, I think we should do that, you know what I'm saying, to get these people involved so that we can get these positions filled and get things standing.
That
any more comments?
I'll second your motion, if that's what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that's the reason I was bringing it up here, to make sure everybody here is okay, too, with it. I think Saturday is probably a better one. You know, I talked to Aaron. He said Saturdays are better for him, too. You know, this, you know, Michelle, there's a few people that feel that Saturdays would be a better day. And I'm looking at 6 o'clock. You know, because we have, again, tomorrow, which is helping out a lot, she works on Saturdays, you know what I'm saying? She normally gets off at 5. Sometimes she doesn't. You know, it's like yesterday, it was like 8 o'clock at night before she got home. So she wouldn't be on the meeting on those days, but that's only, for her, like a couple of days a week. or, you know, the month. So I'm thinking we need to, you know, try to pick a time and a day where we can get as many people involved as we can. So from now on, our meetings will be on Saturdays. Now, like I said, this next Saturday, I will probably be in Colorado, so we won't have a meeting this next weekend. I'm going to go through all of the material I can get for each position in the court, try to give you guys some training on it so everybody knows what they're doing. And some of the videos, I think it's 16. I think it's number 16, the episode. They go in the jurors. They talk about the jurors. So it's 16 and 17. They talk about the jurors and what the jurors do and all that kind of stuff. Definitely listen to that, those videos too, because, you know, when you get called to be in a juror, you need to know exactly what you're doing. You need to know some of the laws and, you know, what's, you know, lawful to do. You know, you don't want to, you got to remember, especially if you have a capital type case, that capital means that somebody's going to die maybe or not, you know what I'm saying, depending on your ruling. And again, on those cases, it has to be unanimous. That means everybody has to agree or we don't kill anybody. You know what I'm saying? We don't go through that process. Then it's more of a 10-year, 20-year, whatever it would be. You know what I'm saying? But those are still considered capital cases because it could turn into that if the jury unanimously says yes. One of the other things that people don't understand is in our jury, too, is on every case, it doesn't have to be unanimous. You know, and also it's a capital case, it's a majority that actually determines, and then they come up with whatever. So a lot of people think that everybody has to agree, or, you know, it's a mistrial or whatever. That isn't the case. That is only the case in capital type cases that we do. You know, so like if it's like a guy runs into your car and then it gets into court because he doesn't want to pay whatever to fix your car, you know, and that one, it's just the majority of the jurors to decide who's going to pay for what and do what or whatever, you know, whatever they liberate, you know, and then the justice will then sign it and say this is what's going to happen and basically give it to the sheriff or whoever it needs to be to enforce that, right? So that's one more thing we got to remember, that it's only capital cases that we need everybody to agree or not. So all 12 people, it has to be 12-0 on those cases. And the other ones, it could be 7-4 or whatever, 7-3. No, wait, 4. Anyway, 12 people. So it just needs to be a majority on the other cases. Any more questions or anything? Then I suggest we adjourn at this time. Everybody want to adjourn? Somebody make a motion?
I motion to adjourn.
Anybody second it?
I second.
Everybody agree? Say aye.
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 There, anybody that don't want to adjourn, say no. Anybody abstaining, say no. Okay, this meeting's adjourned. We'll see you. If I can make a meeting next weekend, I will let you know ahead of time. You know, probably by Wednesday. If not, then it'll be the following week. Thank you all. We'll see you again.
Thanks, Rocky.
Thank you, Rocky.
Welcome.
Thanks, Rocky.